Welcome to 20 Minutes and 2 Beers In. I'm JD.
Hey everybody, this is Bobby.
Episode 163 of the podcast, and it's a very exciting one. We just finished the Winter Olympics.
Yep.
And we have an Olympian on the podcast this week.
That's right. We're an Olympic-sized podcast this week.
We are. Very excited to have John Casper on, Olympic bobsledder from the Nagano Games in 98. And we'll talk to him a little bit about what the whole experience is like.
You get the inside scoop about Olympic Village.
We do. We do. And I've known John for a number of years, so it's exciting to reconnect and kind of see what it's like post-Olympics, too.
Yeah, because now that we're in it, the athletes are all coming home. What are they coming home to? What is the feeling as they're coming out? That's what we get to find out.
Exactly, exactly. We've got some wonderful six-pack. My last call, One Stop Away, is intriguing.
They're always intriguing, JD.
Yeah, that story is intriguing. But, Bobby, I need to read something to you.
You do, the beer devotional.
The beer devotional, 20 minutes and 2 beers in, is nothing without the beer devotional. I don't know if I'd say that, but this is a Prima Pils, and Diana Jordan, a comedian, wrote, "Men are simple things. They can survive a whole week with only three things: beer, boxer shorts, and batteries for the remote control."
There you go. That's absolutely true.
I kind of feel like it is. I kind of feel like it is. But the beer fun fact says, Mary was asleep in bed when her husband Patrick crashed through the front door at 3 a.m. and tried to get up the stairs. "What are you doing?" Mary shouted. Patrick replied, "I'm trying to get this gallon of beer up the stairs." "Leave it down here, Patrick," Mary bellowed. "I can't. I've drunk it." Yeah. I should have done it with an accent. I think that.
Yeah, your accent's always really... there's something.
So tell me about this beer, Bobby.
Yeah, you're giving me a mystery beer. It's a good beer. It's got a little bit of a fruit flavor to it, or a fruit kick to it. An ale? Or is it a lager?
It's an ale.
An ale. JD's projecting his voice as he brings the bottle in here. No, it's a good tasting one. It reminds me of one of our listeners' beers, actually. Do you remember when Mark, one of our listeners, Mark, brewed you some beer and
yes.
Set it up? It reminds me a bit of that.
This is from Rogue. It's called Beard Beer. Have you heard of the Beard Beer, Bobby?
I haven't heard of the Beard Beer.
Let me tell you about the Beard Beer. Beard Beer is brewed with a yeast created from brewmaster John Meyer's beard.
Didn't we talk about this on the podcast?
We talked about it.
All right, I thought so.
No need to freak out. Brewers have used wild yeast in beer making for centuries. John has had the same old beer growth since 1978 and for over 15,000 brews. So it's not a great surprise that a natural yeast ideal for brewing was discovered in his beard.
Oh my gosh.
What does a beard beer taste like? Try it. We think you'll be surprised. Now here's the ingredients. Water, hops, barley, beard, yeast. Now, would you have tried it ahead of time?
I probably would have, because we talked about it on the show, and it's made by Rogue. It's an interesting beer. I think if you walk up to somebody and said, "Taste this, it's made by somebody's beard," I think you're not going to get a lot of people
to
drink it.
It.
But I'm glad I tried it. This man has a very tasty beard.
It's not bad, and a big thank you to Bobby for what we're drinking these brews out of. Bobby and his wife, I had a birthday, and they got me beer glasses, beer pints, that pint glasses that are our new logo.
Yep.
And I'm sure you guys see it on your iTunes, on the website, and Facebook page, and Twitter. Yep. Very cool stuff. Thank you so much.
It's beer tastes delicious in these.
It does.
Just saying.
Even beard beer. That's what you should do with this.
What I've got it, growing on here?
Maybe it's a beard.
It's not a beard yet.
Okay.
It's just growth.
All right. Well, you know what? When we come back, very excited, John Casper will be joining us. Stick around. Take what you want from me. I'm not afraid to turn around. We're back, and we are joined with John Casper, a Thornton, Iowa native. I had to throw that in, John. Went to Upper Iowa University, former assistant strength and conditioning coach with the Minnesota Vikings, but also an Olympian. 1998 Nagano Games, a bobsledder, in his career, four-man bobsled, and did some two-man bobsled as well. He's got World Cup and World Champion medals in the two- and four-man bobsled, Olympic Team Trials Champion in 1998, and as I mentioned, with the Nagano Games in the four-man bobsled, joining us, John Casper. Thanks for joining us, John.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm really honored to be on.
Now, John and I go way back in my TV days. I traveled to Utah, the side of a mountain, and it was cold. And but it was probably one of my most memorable experiences as a journalist to watch John fulfill his dream and qualify for the Olympic bobsled through the trials for the Olympic bobsled. And John, that still sticks out in my mind. That was a great time to see you achieve that dream.
No, exactly. You know, that was 3 years of hard work, and it was an awesome experience to obviously represent your country.
What was the introduction for you into bobsledding? Because it seems like an interesting sport to get into, but something that I don't know that kids have a calling of, I want to be a bobsledder when I grow up. What is it that drew you into it?
Well, you know, I'm sure you've never been to Thornton, Iowa. I mean, it's just a very mountainous area. I mean, it's just as big as Utah, you know, Park City, you know, Colorado. No, but it's about as flat as they come.
Yeah.
You know, I was in grad school and, you know, played football, ran track in college. In grad school, my roommate was actually a 2000 Olympian, Kip Janvrin, and still running track with him. One day on a track, we were, you know, working out, read a little ad in USA Today about bobsledding. There was about six of us out there at the time, and I was a GA for football, and all of a sudden, you know, we're kind of going back and forth. I'm like, oh, bobsledding, that sounds like fun, you know. I like to go fast, you know, usually it's in my car, but then a bunch of guys are like, ah, Casper, you'd be awesome at it. You know, they look for football track-type athletes. So, you know, enough bantering amongst the guys, I ran into my office and called the 800 number that was on this article that explained bobsledding, and I got lucky. The head coach answered the telephone and started explaining the sport a little bit to me, then started asking me questions about, you know, what I was doing, you know, currently, you know, what were some of my times in track. And about 4 weeks later, and this was in 1995, they flew me out to Lake Placid for a tryout.
Wow.
That is
amazing. The rest, they say, is history?
Well, yeah. You know, I went through a series of tryouts that year, and I had a tryout every year, even though I was on the team for a year. It's just you have to earn your spot, per se. So it was an awesome experience.
Tell me about those Nagano Games. What's it like for those opening ceremonies when you're going out with representing your country?
You know, I was just saying this the other day. I live in Millstadt, Illinois now, and I spoke at my kids' school. With the exception of competing, the biggest thing I remember is the opening ceremonies. You know, you're walking into the stadium. I'm walking literally between two guys. One had been a two-time Olympian. The other guy was a three-time Olympian. You know, cameras are flying by. We turned the corner to come into the stadium, and I look to my left, and I see these three guys who I can still picture perfect to today, holding this huge American flag and yelling, God bless America. Mm-hmm. And that's when it hit me, you know, all that hard work for those 3 years, you know, living in Lake Placid, traveling with the team for 5 months out of the year. It just hit me that, you know, it was all worth it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I can't let the people back in Thornton, Iowa see me cry or have tears in my eyes, you know, with these cameras going back and forth. So I kind of looked into both sides of me, again, a two-time Olympian, three-time Olympian. They're like, John, let it go. Because, you know, next thing you know, tears are coming down their eyes.
Yeah.
And it was just a great experience.
Well, how soon or how much time passes between the opening ceremonies and when you're actually doing your event? Is it, are you getting into it right away, or is it still about a week wait for you, or how long did it take?
Yeah, I mean, we started practicing right away the next day.
Okay.
You know, most people that obviously would have competed that next day wouldn't have walked in the opening ceremonies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and we started practicing the next day. You know, we had to take in the whole experience. So, yeah, about a week away, though.
Yeah.
Speaking of the whole experience, what's the Olympic Village like? I mean, you hear crazy stories, but, I mean, you're among these elite athletes. What was it, surreal?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was awesome. You know, one of the things that, you know, these games kind of reminded me of is security. Mm-hmm. You know, people are like, you know, what was the security like in Nagano? You know, that was in 98, a long time ago. You know, one thing when we went through processing in Osaka to come to Nagano, the first thing they told us was, hey, when you get to the village, you cannot put out an American flag. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, why not? They're like, well, we don't want anybody to know where the Americans are. But you can put out a Canadian flag. And I'm like, oh, great. I'll be a Canadian for 2 weeks.
Yeah. What kind of... keep going. Sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, you're fine. You know, another thing as far as in the village, a lot of people always ask, you know, so what did you eat? Well, I'm not a big fish guy. Mm-hmm. And in Japan, even the spaghetti sauce had fish in it.
Oh.
So, you know what I ate? I ate the great American experience, McDonald's.
Nice.
I knew what I was eating, but it also got me a commercial.
Oh.
I'd come by 2 to 3 times a day. You know, I wouldn't obviously pig out by any means, but... finally, this lady's like, you know, why are you always here? I'm like, ma'am, I don't like fish. And every time I go over there to eat something out of the normal line, it's got fish in it. Unless they have steak night, I'm here. It did get me an opportunity, me and the rest of my four-man team, to do a McDonald's commercial.
Hey, great job. You know, so not... usually bad stuff comes out of eating McDonald's all the time, but for you, a very good situation came out of that. So let's get, you know, this is a beer drinking podcast, John, so let's get down to it. What was it like partying in Olympic Village?
So, you know, here's the best story I got about beer.
Okay.
Is, I remember one day walking, it was in the evening, actually, walking down one of the sidewalks, and I saw these guys, they had USA clothing on, literally rolling in a keg of beer. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, I'd like to go to that party.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, I can't do it. But, I my curiosity, I couldn't stop. So I stopped one of the guys. I said, hey, you know, where are you guys going with that? You know, and they're like, oh, we're going to our room. You know, the coach, we're having a party. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I said, so are you guys the coaches, the managers? What are you? Oh, no, we're athletes. I'm sitting there thinking, man, am I in the wrong sport? My coaches were former Soviet Union athletes and won 5 Olympic medals between the two of them.
Yeah.
You know, drinking beer was not on the menu.
Not part of the program.
Guess what sport they competed in?
I'm going curling. Yep, I was going to guess curling.
Always know the curlers will always have a good time.
Exactly. I mean, all they got to do is, what, push a little stone and sweep.
Yeah. You do that drinking usually. I mean, that's what bags is. That's what bocce ball is.
Yeah, right.
You always do better with a beer in hand.
It's a drinking sport.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about those closing ceremonies. I mean, that's got to be tough too, because you've trained for years and years and years for this event, and then all of a sudden, just like that, as quickly as it got there, it's over.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Because I competed actually that last weekend of the games. Mm-hmm. So we competed Sunday was the closing ceremonies, and we competed that morning. So the difference between the opening ceremonies and the closing, I mean, the closing is just a big party is all it is. I mean, everyone's, you know, having a good time. They've, you know, their Olympic experience is over, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that was good in Nagano, obviously, you know, you talked about beer earlier, is, you know, sake was pretty good, too.
Very true.
That's a good party drink.
So
I didn't get to have it till Sunday, but sure. It was good.
So you leave the Olympic Games and you come back to the States. How tough of an adjustment was that? Because you're immersed in this amazing experience, and now you got to kind of reel back and be back to normal life. Was that a tough adjustment?
It was at first. When I came back to the States, I didn't know exactly for sure what I was going to do. I had a master's in science, a bachelor's degree in teaching. I kept thinking, you know, am I done? Am I going to keep competing? Well, then I decided at that time I was going to keep competing. So I enlisted. At that time, I was going to get into the elite athlete program that the Army has.
Mm.
And I was going through the whole process of getting, involved in that program. And I'd already signed my final papers. Then I got a phone call from the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
Moving around with my wife for her job, we lived in Minnesota, and I had the ability to train in their facility for a whole off season and got to know some of them. And so when Brian Billick left Minnesota to go be the head coach with the Ravens, he took the assistant strength coach with him to be the head strength coach out there. And so they called me, went through the interview process, and got the job. And so, you know, then I'm calling back to St. Louis to the recruiting officer saying, hey, what can I do to get out of these papers? I just accepted a job with the Vikings, and I mean, she was really cool about it. And so, I mean, so my initial transformation, I guess you'd say, into the workplace wasn't probably normal. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't go sit in an office. I got to go coach in the NFL.
Sure.
Wow.
Well, and so, you... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go. To kind of answer your question in a little bit more detail, you know, after my time was done with the Vikings, I worked with them until Dennis Green was the coach, and he was let go, so the whole staff was let go, and
yeah.
I hadn't decided what I was going to do, if I was going to stick around, so I went back into bobsledding, competed for a whole nother year with hopes of making Salt Lake City. And had some knee problems, and that's when reality hit.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I had to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 01, 02, and that was not easy.
Sure.
And you were probably, around 33 at the time, too, so you knew it was probably going to be your last try anyway?
No, exactly, and... I knew it was my last try. My wife kept telling me, you know, I had to stop going abroad and playing around like a little kid. it's not easy, you know. And I've talked to several athletes that have tried to make, you know, that transition, and it's not easy for any of them.
Mm-hmm. Now that you're a dad, sitting here at home watching the games, how is it to sit there and describe this to your family?
Yeah, I have three kids, an 11-year-old boy, a 9-year-old boy, and a 7-year-old girl. It's awesome because, they're as entrenched into the Winter Olympics as I am. And it's awesome because, you know, they sit there and they ask questions, like Sunday during the 4-man race in Sochi. Holcomb, who I competed with in 2000, 2001, he's going for a medal, and it's just awesome to sit there with your family and watch it, sitting on the edge of your seat, hoping for an Olympic medal for the USA, mm-hmm. and, you know, and explaining it to them, you know, okay, here's what they're going to do. Here's what they're doing. Just explaining the whole intricacy of bobsledding.
Well, and you were an athlete that when you answered an ad and you trained for a number of years before being able to be the athlete to be on the team to go to Nagano. What were your thoughts about using Lolo Jones, a track athlete, on a bobsled team for this Winter Olympics?
You know, the CEO of bobsled was a teammate of mine in '98, Darren Steele, and you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, I think Lolo was put on a team for some marketing reasons? Absolutely, because. Yeah. You know, she wasn't put on USA 1 or USA 2. She was put on USA 3.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it brought some notoriety to the women's bobsled team. You know, a lot of attention, obviously. And I'm sure we'll bring some sponsorship to it. But the double-edged sword, the other side of it is, you know, I know there was two girls that probably deserved that spot a lot more than she did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of them was an Olympic, you know, she was in the Olympics 4 years prior to that and had just as good of times as she did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I get what they were doing, but do I think it was fair, you know, as an athlete? No, I don't.
Mm.
Yeah, it that is tough, too, because you don't want people to, you know, this is extremely difficult and precise, you know, this sport. You don't want any athlete to think, oh, heck yeah, I can do the bobs. No, yeah. You can't.
Yeah.
No, you can't. It takes so much work and unique skill.
Exactly. I mean, you think about Willie Gault, Edwin Moses tried to make the team in 94. Mm-hmm. I mean, great athletes, great track athletes couldn't make it.
Sure.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we won't take any more of your time. Thank you so much, John, for giving us an inside peek of what it's like to be an Olympian and be at the Village. And it's wonderful to reconnect with you.
Oh, no, you guys too. And I don't know, are we supposed to like clang mugs or something like that now?
There you go.
Well, we'd have to get our second beer because it's two beers in. So.
There you go.
But thank you so much, and we'll be in touch.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Big thank you to John Casper for joining us.
Absolutely.
That was a lot of fun. And when we were off camera for a moment, he was telling us that his sister-in-law, Jenny, is a two-time Olympian, goalie for soccer for New Zealand.
The Kiwis.
Yeah, for New Zealand.
She's got the goal.
That is horrible.
That was the worst
really?
One. I was warming up with a New Zealander accent, and I was killing it.
You almost had one that was relatively close. It was more like a Foster's commercial, what you had earlier, though. But
yeah.
No, you totally missed. But a big thank you again to John for joining us.
Well, really loved it.
Really? No? You're not even close.
Oh, all right.
Not even remotely close.
Save me and give us some music. Well,
I do have some music. It's a new group called Crosses. It's a side project of Deftone singer Chino Marino and far guitarist Sean Lopez, rather, along with Chuck Doom. These guys formed this group, and this is the song called This Is a Trick. you can definitely tell there's some Deftones influence there. And, absolutely. And I was even saying it's got a Muse feeling about it with a little, maybe even Depeche Mode mixed in.
Yeah, it's got a good mix of everything kind of into it. Yeah, nice. Okay. They got an album coming out? It
came out 2 weeks ago.
Okay, yep. Cool. JD, this is a new track by Jack Antonoff.
Oh!
From Steel Train and Fun. I'm very excited. He's got a new project. This is called, the band that he's put together is yep. called Bleachers, and this song is called I Want to Get Better. Hey, I hear the voice of a preacher from the back room, calling my name and I follow just to find you. I trace the faith to a broken down television and put on the weather. Then I've trained myself to give up on the past, cause I've frozen time between hearses and caskets. Lost control when I panicked at the acid test. I wanna get better. While my friends were getting high and chasing girls down Parkway lines, I was losing my mind because the love, the love, the love, the love, the love that I gave wasted on a night.
I like it. I actually think that might be one of those summer hit type of things because it's catchy.
Yeah, he deserves it, man. They put out between Steel Train, Fun, and now this. I mean, guys got the creative bug, I think, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's time for a six-pack of questions. And these are just random questions that we throw to each other each and every week. And we need music to start it, but before that, we had a little competition.
We had competition, mini bags, miniature bags, your idea.
Yes.
And you lost 21-6.
Couldn't believe how painful it was, Bobby.
Painful.
Painful, not losing to you, which is always painful.
Get ready for his excuse, folks.
What my problem was.
Okay.
It hurt my shoulder.
All right, let's start music. Okay. We're going to start the
I had listeners my bicep
were
four
moved. Seasons in now. The listeners are tired of your complaints about why you lose these feats.
Just start the music and start it now. Bobby, they're going to be doing Heroes again. It's coming back to NBC.
Yep.
Lasted a few seasons, was a big hit the first season, then dropped off considerably, mm-hmm. and then just went into the ether after that. They're bringing it back. Do you care?
I never watched a single episode of the original run, and I will never be watching a single episode of this run. So, no, it matters not.
There you go.
JD, the no collision rule is now in effect in baseball. You cannot collide. You cannot force a collision with the catcher at home plate. Likewise, the catcher cannot block the plate.
Right.
What do you think about the new rule?
I think it's okay. I mean, the collisions are fun to see, but
is the Buster Posey rule, is that what we're calling
it? It really is. That's what it is. Yeah. To avoid injury, make it a little bit safer. I'm okay with it. I don't think it's. It happens so infrequently that I don't think it's gonna matter. Clowney ran a 40.
Yeah.
4.53 40. He's a big man.
Mm-hmm.
And ran a 4.53.
He's motoring.
He was fast. Does that change his draft status? And I throw this caveat in there. They do the bench press. How many times can you bench 2.25? He only threw it up 21 times. There's a punter who benched more than he did.
Yeah.
But does the 40 propel him?
No, because for a defensive lineman, I don't care how far you're going to be running 40 yards, because if you're running 40 yards after somebody, something went terribly, terribly wrong on the play. I care how you do.
It's making headlines.
I know. I care about your strength, but also you can improve strength when you get into the NFL. It's your moves that you have. Lateral moves, I want to see that. I want to see cone drills, JD. I want to see how you do in those.
Yep.
There's the big story about the Cleveland Browns attempting to trade for Jim Harbaugh. How close was it to coming to fruition?
Right.
We don't really know. We probably won't know for a few years when somebody finally gets fired or changes jobs and opens up about stuff like that. How many coaches in the NFL today would you trade for?
You know,
obviously Belichick would be somebody that you trade for.
Potentially. You know, I think a hot guy that people would be going after would be Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
I aside from Pete Carroll, maybe Belichick, I think that's it. Yeah. I really don't think they're... I mean,
neither of the Harbaughs you'd want to trade for?
I think they'd be right up there,
mm-hmm.
but because they're young.
Yeah.
Because Pete Carroll's actually older than you think.
Yeah.
Type of guy.
Sure.
And Belichick is too.
Mm-hmm.
So I could throw the Harbaughs up there. Maybe just those four, and they're in a class of their own.
Okay.
As far as NFL coaches. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is coming up. Kiss is being inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Get excited. Here's the deal. They're not going to perform in any way whatsoever. Because what rendition of Kiss is going to play? Is it with Peter Criss and Ace Frehley? With Gene and Paul? There's so much bad blood there. They're like, Gene's just like, Kiss will not perform.
A lot of tributes to Kiss is what's going on. Maybe the midget tribute to Kiss.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. Are you disappointed? Do you think it's a bad move?
No, I don't know that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame really... I don't know what it means to a musician. I guess that'd be something to ask a musician, what that really means to him, because it's such a subjective thing.
Yeah.
I mean, do they think of it like it's the Grammys? Because Grammys don't get any respect from a lot of artists. So what does it mean to you to be elected to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? It just means that you were really great. Sure, but you already had the legions of fans and millions of dollars to prove to you that. So I don't think it makes that big of a difference that Kiss is not going to be reuniting to play this. It sucks that they can't put that stuff behind them, because you know that that's what the army would love to see.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know what? Just have Trent Reznor play the remaining minutes that he wanted to play at the Grammys.
There you go. That's one way to solve it all. JD, Fox, rather than what baseball does during a rain delay, they play, you know, movies, or they have stories come on.
Yep.
Rather than do that, Fox, with Daytona rained out, they played last year's Daytona 500 with a scroller on the bottom saying this is last year's Daytona 500.
They do that, yep.
But what would you, and it caused a lot of mistakes, we won't get into that right now.
And yeah, Fox even reported.
Fox News reported that Jimmy Johnson won the Daytona 500 based off of
made for a good soundbite after that.
It did. What should Fox have done rather than show last year's Daytona 500 during that rain delay?
I think you need to have a bunch of stories in the can ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason there can't be profiles on every single driver you have, because you have a whole off season to compile these. What have they done in the off season? Have they changed their pit crew? Have they changed their manager? What's going on? Who's Danica dating? I mean, there's a lot of different storylines that are going on before this, which is very unique in sports, having the biggest event as the first event of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a whole offseason to be ready for this. So to just say, push play on that over there. No, I think they should have had profiles ready to go.
There you have it. All right, when we come back, last call, one stop away.
Closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world.
Bobby, time for the odd news of the week. And our last call, one stop away, what do you got?
JD, if you really wanted a job, I mean, you worked your entire life for this job, to work for this company, and you get called into the interview room, what would it take to get you to walk out of that interview room? Is there anything that would, before you even can do the interview, is there anything that could happen that would mean, like, I'm just walking out, I'm not even going to participate in the interview
process?
You're
saying, like, after the interview started, or...
Before the interview's even begun, you show up to the place to do the interview, and then you're like, you know what, I'm walking out. The reason why I ask you this, JD, is because that is what Adam Mwema did, San Diego State running back, did at the NFL Combine. So he gets the invite to the NFL Combine, which only, 120 people get, something around there?
Not a lot, yeah.
Not a lot of people get to go. They were projecting him between 4th and 7th rounder. And he left the combine without working out, citing religious reasons. He said his favorite team is the Seattle Seahawks. Okay. That's who he wants to play for. And he said that God told him if he missed workouts, he'd play for the Seattle Seahawks. Yep. He said, sit down, be quiet, enjoy the peace, and you'll be a Seahawk. So that is how he's rolling the dice here, JD, with the biggest job interview of his career was that day, and he just decided not to work out.
So if you're Detroit, you're sitting there, man, we really... Oh, wait. He's not going to play for us. God told him to play for Seattle. that's weird. I mean, you know, whatever the guy's beliefs are, sure, they are what sure. they are. But, yeah, like you point, it's the biggest interview of his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come on, man.
Come on, man.
Mine happened in Orland Park, which is not far from where we're at here in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And according to police, a drunken Illinois couple refused to pay the fare from a cab ride from Rosemont to Orland Park. That's a cab ride. That's a haul. After driving to their destination, the man and his date informed the driver they couldn't pay the $83 fare.
Oof.
Driver upset, called the police.
Fair.
Officers arrived to find an exasperated driver, two intoxicated, incoherent passengers, and clothing strewn throughout the taxi. Oh, I forgot to tell you this. They were doing the hibbity-jibbity all the way
there.
Yes. So when the police arrived,
confessions.
The 27-year-old man opted to use his mother's credit card to pay the bill. 27 years old, hibbity-jibbity in the taxi. I'm going to use mom's credit card. Police took the 31-year-old woman to the police station, and her brother eventually came and picked her up. Unsurprisingly, the cab driver said he picked up this couple outside of a bar.
No way.
It happened.
You know, here's how he makes his cab fare up. You don't charge them. You have them sign a waiver because all the cabs now have these really nice cameras
and
in them.
You sell it to HBO
for a new episode of Taxi Cab Confessions.
Yeah, crazy.
Were they like, hey, we gave you a free show, guy?
Yeah, they're like, what? $83? No.
She charged me less than that, bro.
Oh, there you went. You went there. Well, hey, it's been a fun podcast. A big thank you to Olympian John Casper for joining us. So much fun. And until next week, we'll see you.
She's got to go.
John, for
big
for
thanks.
Well,
really loved it.